Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is May 30.
Yep.
Yeah, because June 1st is Friday.
Yeah, you on it?
Yeah, I'm on it. I've been all right the past couple shows. I've been pretty good with it, you know? How's everybody doing?
I'm good.
How was Memorial Day weekend?
For me, it was low. I was in D.C. The latter half of last week, which was great. That part was great. I spent some time with Cheyenne, obviously. And
How's Cheyenne doing, by the way? It's like, well, hold on now. Okay. Hold on now. You're skipping over the good part. How's she doing?
Cheyenne is good. You know, she's doing her social media influencer thing. Cheyenne is a natural hair guru on the interwebs.
Is she going to do another TED Talk soon?
We don't know yet, but, you know, we're working towards some things of that nature. And so we were hanging out. We went to my friend Jay Period did a kind of live mixtape thing at the Kennedy Center on Wednesday. And it was Paz from De La. Pharrell Monch. It was Dead Prez, you know, and they did like a little panel talking about hip hop then and hip hop now. So that was dope. And while I was there, I got to meet a few of the homies from Twitter. I got to meet Inca, aka Soul Almondy, and Ivy. We had brunch. So that was awesome.
Yes. How were they?
They're great. And Ivy is just like a healthy, happy, alert baby. She had grits for the first time and bacon for the first time, so that was exciting.
Get that baby some of this bacon.
Let me tell y'all how Ivy, the bacon, there were no pieces of bacon that could be broken down small enough for her to eat it, so Inca had to take it out of her mouth, and Ivy had an entire fit and was reaching across the table trying to grab all the bacon. You gotta give me that back.
I got to have that.
I need that right there. Yeah. So that was great. Like, she's such a happy baby. Inca's such a sweetheart. And I also met Aram, who I know you know, Sean. I don't know if you know her, Jeff. Yeah. But she's also one of our Twit pals, and it's crazy because me and
what's her name on online?
It's Aram. She's like underscore A.
She's the chef.
She's the lesbian in the kitchen.
Oh, okay. I don't know her, but I've seen her before.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and it's crazy because with Inca and Aram, like, I've known Aram via Twitter long enough for, like, Aram to have named a ham after me in her first cookbook, but I had never met her in person. It's just crazy how Twitter can facilitate these friendships, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was dope. And I caught up, like, it never works when you're just in town for a hot minute, especially when you don't tell people you're in town that you get to link up. And this time, like, all the stars were aligned. I got to see one of my friends from high school and his daughter. I got to see one of my sorors who I hadn't seen in years. I got to see another one of my friends who I hadn't seen in years. Like, it just happened so that I was able to catch up with everybody. So that was a dope trip. But then I got back here and it was cold and rainy. So
disgusting.
Yeah. So Memorial Day was a wash.
Yeah. Disgusting. I had a hoodie on, was that Sunday? And Sunday I had a hoodie on. It was whack. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
Terrible weekend.
Yeah. But Friday and Saturday here was nice though.
Friday was great. We did a little something for Mona. Shout out to my wife, Mona. She's being honored at the National Museum, National African American Museum of Music down in
Music. Yeah, oh, that's in like Nashville or something.
Yeah,
right?
It's in Nashville. We're going to Nashville. So
shout out to Mona. Congratulations.
Yeah, so we did a little, well, I put together a little dinner for her at the house because, you know, I was going to do a classic barbecue, but, you know, we knew that the weather was going to be shit on Saturday and Sunday. What I still was telling us, then it wound up being halfway decent on Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday was nice.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, at that point, I had already, you know, shifted gears. So
yeah.
We did something nice at the house. It was cool. You know, it was a beautiful night because it was comfortable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were able to be outside for a while.
Yeah, I fell through that motherfucker for a few minutes. You know? Yeah. I fell up in that motherfucker.
Got a little taste.
Got a little me taste of some brown, you know what I'm saying? Some little shit. Got on up out of there, you know what I'm saying? I'm gone now.
Yeah.
So. But, yeah, and that was nice. My cousin got married that same day down in Old Bridge, New Jersey. So I was out in Jersey anyway for the wedding. So I did that and then, the reception or whatever. Then, fell through Sean and Mona for a little bit on the way to the city. Yeah, and it was a good quiet weekend. Saw Deadpool 2. I enjoyed it. It's basically like Deadpool 1, though. Like, if you like Deadpool 1, you'll like it, but it's almost the same movie, like, literally. It's like,
see, I don't know. I'm not... I liked Deadpool 1, but I'm not in a rush to see Deadpool. Like, I'll be okay if I wait for Deadpool 2 to come out.
Yeah, like, you can.
Just because Deadpool's fun, but it serves no purpose, if that makes
sense.
Yeah,
it's just a bunch of, like, real witty banter.
Yeah.
You know, some really funny lines in there, some real, like, funny, you know, pranks and stuff in there, funny bits. But, yeah, you know, and then they introduce the X-Force, which is Domino, Colossus, I forget the name of the Cable... And one other character, I forget, Domino is played by the girl who plays Van on Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's actually really good in the movie. And then Cable is played by Josh Brolin, who also played Thanos. So right now,
Josh Brolin a lot.
Yeah, Josh Brolin's killing it. Between Thanos and the Cable character, he's on fire in the Marvel Universe. Like I said, if you like, I wouldn't tell people like run out and see it, but like it was, if you like, you know, it's Friday night, Saturday night, you don't want to see Star Wars or some shit, you know, it's a good Saturday night movie. You know, I give it, you know,
Star Wars, which is apparently underperforming.
Yeah. I hear it's not doing great. I plan on seeing it this weekend. But I just never got around to it, man. I was like, I'm good. I'm cool. I saw Deadpool. That's enough for me. I wanted to, real quick, I just wanted to give a mention to Queen Sugar. It came back last night. Mm-hmm. And then another one comes on tonight.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's another episode tonight. So episodes 1 and 2. It picks up, it looks to be maybe a year from, maybe not quite a year.
I don't think it's a year. I think
Maybe like a few months from where it dropped off the last time. There's a bit of, you know, progress in Hollywood and, Aunt Vi have just come back from vacation from Italy. Micah seems to be back adjusted to being a high school student again. He's picked up photography. Him and Charlie have moved into a big, beautiful house. So they left that kind of loft apartment that they had. What's her name?
Nova.
Nova has got a book deal on the table. And Blue is really acting out because his mom is gone. She's in D.C.
Right.
Ralph Angel's definitely struggling with being a single dad. You know, so, but you know, I mean, as everybody knows who listens, I love that show a lot. So, you know, I'm all in
from the door.
Did you watch last night?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was panicking for a minute cause I switched cable providers. I switched away from Verizon back to Time Warner because my Verizon bill was stupid. And, the hardest thing about switching cable providers is remembering to reset all your shows on a DVR. And I was like on late Monday night, like 3 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden I was like, oh shit, I forgot to set my DVR for Queen Sugar because I just didn't know if I was going to be. And I don't think I watched it in real time. I think I watched it a little bit after. But yeah,
I watched it a little later too. Speaking of which, my cable provider, Optimum, they had a big war and we lost Stars.
I don't watch. That's
Power.
Power. Yeah,
Power's coming back on in like 2 weeks.
Damn, bro.
You better get on that Fire Stick, nigga.
I know. I got to do something, man. I'm like, these motherfuckers here, man. I didn't want to lose Stars. Shit.
Wow.
Yeah, man. They had some war with them about, you know, Stars wanted to charge more money. Some shit that we had nothing to do with. And so now we jammed up. So, yeah, I got to get on a Fire Stick or, like, watch. I don't know what I'm nervous about that.
This might get resolved. This happens from time to time.
Yeah. Right at the end, they'll be like, we worked out a deal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Did any of y'all watch Real Housewives of Potomac?
I did.
Yeah, I watched a portion of it, yeah.
And, like, I keep saying this, but I'm going to keep saying it. It's something about Monique.
What about her?
I don't like her. It's something about, and I know you like her, Jeff, because you feel like she's genuine, but she's too quick to go left.
I'm starting to like her as much as I used to.
Yeah, she's too quick to go left and pop off, and there's just something... Like, she definitely does think she's better than everybody just because of her money.
It's not, it's really her husband's money, but
I can't even really, it's more than that, but I can't properly articulate it because she's kind of a bitch, actually. She's kind of a bitch who doesn't think she's a bitch.
Okay.
I think, and I know people hate women calling other women bitches, and I don't do it often for real. Like, I might be like, bitch, such and such. I don't often call people a bitch, but she's kind of a bitch who doesn't think she's a bitch. And that's what bothers me.
Well, what I think is starting to unfurl with her this season is she has this, you know, access to this money, and she got a Bentley, and she got, you know, the big house. And
she's,
you know,
fake busy.
Fake like busy, like fake a motherfucker. Busy. Super fake busy. But in reality, I think deep down, she's not that happy with her life.
Right.
I don't think she's not, you know, I think she loves Chris and all that.
But she's not fulfilled.
Like she's not fulfilled, which is why she's doing all the fake busy and buying this and always talking about, I can buy this and I can buy that. But I think I've told this story on this podcast before, but, well, she ain't a friend of mine no more because I ain't talked to her in years, but I used to have a friend way back. We didn't mess around. We were just actually friends. We worked together. And she was a hot chick. You know what I'm saying? This is like mid, late 80s. She was popping. She was just with Eddie Murphy and on them was popping, right? So she'd be out of Bubble Hill and she was up at Bentley's with all the D-Boys and the Knicks and da da da. She was lit, right? And so she ended up marrying, I'm gonna not say his name on the show because I don't want to do that, but I'll tell y'all later. He's somebody you would know. She ended up marrying an NBA player.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
And she moved to L.A. And then when she moved to L.A., she used to call me, like, at, you know, sometimes just to talk. And she was miserable. I was like, what's up? She was like, yo, like, yeah, I got all this money, but, like, how much can I shop? Like, I'm not, I have dad, the two kids were pretty young at the time. She's like, what else? There's nothing, I don't do anything. Like, I'm just in this big-ass house, you know, NBA players on the road. 41, there's 82 games. They're on the road 41 out of 82. So he's gone. And even when he's home, you got to practice. And so he's never around. And I'm sure probably was fucking everything moving at that point anyway. And she's, so I'm just saying, I feel like Monique's in that same kind of space where it's like, I got to this space where I thought this dream of having access to all this money and all this fancy shit was going to fulfill me. And it's not, which is also why I think she drinks so much.
Well, especially when you used to be a hot girl and you was out here, right? And now you living in bumfuck Maryland, with a bunch of, like, in the middle of nowhere with your kids all day. Yeah, because she's young. Monique's young. She's, like, in her early 30s, right?
I don't even know if she's 30.
She might just be 30 years
old. Right. Yeah. Like, she's
like 28, 29. She's young.
Really young with three very small kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a lot. It seems like Chris is real, is for real busy, and her ass is fake busy, and she's alienated from Chris's family. I don't hear her talk a lot about her own family.
and also, wasn't your brother and them be down there? They stay with her.
Her brother, yeah, her folks, it seems like her folks come down there and they look like they stay.
Yeah, for like a couple months of the clip.
Yeah, it looks like they come down there and they down there for 2 weeks at a time. And, you know, I'm going to go back and change my clothes, basically, I'll be back. You know, it's really the epitome of, you know, money doesn't buy you happiness, right? Yep. Like you're watching this person sort of, and you see it in her behavior, right? She doesn't, not only does she seem like she's not fulfilled, but she just seems like she just doesn't have friends.
Yep.
She doesn't seem like she has friends. And
that's why she keeps glomming on to the different cast members.
And also too, like, hey, I mean, can we be honest here? Like, she doesn't come off as a friendly person. She doesn't, unlike Giselle or Robin, who had their own shit with them, they are still very friendly people. Even Ashley, with all of her shit, there's a friendly engagement that you get when you see them. Mm-hmm. And she just never seems to have that. And she always has this sort of chip on her shoulder. And yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the drinking sort of has, you know, added to that. But I definitely feel like it's just a matter of her not really being secure, because guess what? You're going to be, you know, you're 30 years old and you're Chris's wife and the kid's mom.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And yeah. she definitely is insecure, because it's very much always, let me remind you how much money I have. Let me remind you're jealous of me, but like literally all you have is houses and money. Like that's it.
And we like somebody needs to really, and I hope someone has on the side and off camera pulled her coattail to legitimately come to her and say, look, man, like, stop this shit about the I wasn't drunk.
Okay? Yeah, because you're lying.
Stop. Like, yeah, this shit is a problem. You have children, and I am not at all suggesting she's ever done this with her kids. I don't, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to come off like that. But
you can't minimize it.
You cannot minimize this, and you're minimizing it. Like you said on air, on camera, that, yo, you were drinking before you left, and how you're not a lightweight, and you, none of that shit matters. And like Giselle said, yo, if you had the blow, you was going.
Yeah. How you talking about I was tired and so you fell asleep at the wheel? It was 3:00 in the afternoon.
because you were tired because that alcohol.
That's
my point. Like, nobody don't be tired and falling asleep at 3:00 in the afternoon at the wheel. Like, yeah, it was 3:00 a.m, okay, but 3:00 p.m? Come on, shorty. You had 4 martinis, like Ashley said. I don't think Ashley had no reason to lie about the amount of drinks that y'all had. You have 4 martinis. You was turning up and probably And as she said, they have 4 martinis, and she had another drink, which she drunk half of and sent back. So you was lit, right. And then, you know, and yeah, and you drove your shit into a ditch, man. Like, and you know, like, own, like you said, own it and stop the lying, man. It's not cool. Well, the one thing about this show this season, to me, even more than last season, is every episode, pretty much, it's been one thing that has just like blown my mind. Like last week, it was what was it last week? Oh, about finding out
Ashley's
that Mike's
mother.
Michael's giving him $4,500 a month, cat, you know, tax free. So this week it was to really find out the background of the new girl, Candace's fiance. It's like, okay, so Chris. This guy's Chris. He's got one son who he hasn't seen in 10 years.
Who lives in the area.
And he has 2 small children with another woman who he only sees once a month. So I'm like, he's showing you he's a deadbeat dad. Like, he's showing you what kind of father he is. He ain't involved in none of his kids' life heavy. And don't seem to be tripping about it. Like, you know.
At all.
He seemed to be good money.
He seemed upset about, maybe I need to rewatch it. He seemed upset when he was talking about the kid he hasn't seen, because he was like, I want to see him, but then there's drama and
there's no way. There's no way that my child is living in the area and I'm going 10 years without seeing him. Even if it's drama with the mom, and it could, I don't doubt that it might be drama with the mom. I'm curious to know what that drama stems from, but whatever. But it ain't no way that I'm like going 10 years. 10 years, and I'm just like, eh, whatever.
She been keeping you away for 10 years, bro.
That's what I'm saying.
And you're seeing your other kids once a month. So to me, it seems like a pattern, right? Like,
exactly.
It seems like this sort of, listen, I don't think Chris, has a hefty income from what it seems like, because money has come up before. And I'm not, you know, seems like a stand up dude in terms of a working guy. Like, he looks like he's goes to work and just does his job or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not shooting him down for that. Right. Yeah, but I think drama And I think all of those things are very easy to use as excuses when you're not able to fulfill other capacities as a dad, right? Like when you're not able to fill those other things. So I think it's very easy because when, like, I could say this, if he ain't seen them in 10 years, he definitely ain't on papers.
Definitely right. not, because he'd be locked up.
Definitely ain't on papers, bro. And if you're seeing the other kids once a month, my nigga, like,
once
your kids are like your fucking electric bill, my nigga. Like, what are we, like, do you know how much shit goes on in a kid's life in a month?
That's what I'm saying. 30 days?
Like, it's a long time.
That's a long ass time.
So
that's like,
it's weird to watch. And honestly, what is amazing is weird sort of watching this woman, you know, basically apologize to her mother.
Yeah.
For, you know, her fiance. Yeah, right. Like, bullshit. And I said this before, like, if this nigga name was Darnell and he was also a stand up dude that worked down to the airport in baggage claim or whatever, and his situation was apples to apples, he wouldn't be nothing more than a weekend fling. That nigga would never, Darnell would never get to meet her mother. Never.
Yeah, I don't even know he'd be a weekend fling. She probably would look down on that nigga like, get the fuck up out of here.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, she might look at him like a, you know, like, listen, she, you know, she was out at the club. She might have some fun with him once, you know, came over and bought some Chipotle, you know what I'm saying? Yep. And they got a black bone out. Word. And that was it. But,
she wouldn't be taking him. Taking on a situation and all
she
that
ain't taking him to Chris's house for his birthday.
Yeah, no,
you understand what I'm saying? Not. Like, she's locked in to do. And I think that I definitely think that there's a complex. I think that the fact that her dad left has her wanting to be married.
Yep.
The fact that this dude is a white man her absolutely smitten.
No question.
I don't like her either, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Ashley and Monique get on my god. All three of them get on my goddamn nerves because they all think they know everything about everything. And
what do they all have in common?
They're young as fuck.
They're young as fuck. All three of them is 30 and under.
And annoying. And Ashley really gets on my nerves because sometimes she's really, really good and then she just flips all the way over to
Ashley's like 28.
Yeah, but Ashley admits that she goes for the jugular when she gets defensive. So at least she can admit it about herself. Like, she knows she flips. But this new girl, first of all, her weave is bad. Her weave is bad. And I don't know what it is. This is going to sound so
bad. You ain't
bad.
That cute.
Your hair is uneven.
You look dusty.
But this is going to sound really, really bad. And I fully, like, if y'all come at me, I'm sorry. But it's something about black women, like full black, not mixed, not interracial, not exotic, but full black women who date white men always have bad weave. I don't understand it. I literally don't understand it. And it's so confusing. Or they have really wiggy wigs. And I'm baffled. If somebody understands this, I need y'all to at me and explain.
She said wiggy wigs.
Yeah, like super wiggy wigs. You never see, I mean, maybe y'all haven't seen it, but when I've seen a black woman, like, and again, not like a mixed woman, not an exotic looking woman, but like just a normal, you from down the road in Maryland, black girl like this one with a white man, they have really bad weave. Maybe white men don't know the difference. I don't fucking know. Anyway, her weave is bad and she definitely has a complex of some sort. And she clearly, I feel like she wants to present the appearance that she's above her station. Like, I get it. Your mom got some money. She's a successful psychiatrist.
See, I don't like her mom.
But you wasn't, you ain't at a Jack and Jill ilk. You ain't that.
But you know what? I think she is, though. I mean,
they frown.
Bougie is a motherfucker.
Her mom's, her mom.
I think her mom is new bougie, though. I don't think she
I also think her mom has never let go of her dad. She's never let go of that hurt. She's never gotten over that hurt. And the fact that they would sort of, okay, you're 30 something years old and you're going to get married, right? The expectation of being for a wedding as a tradition, and he is he is old school as patriarchy. I understand that, right? But the rule of thumb was he was giving away his daughter. Mm-hmm. Right. Like it was one less mouth to feed in his home. So right. he you know what I'm saying? There was a process to that, right? Like, so to frown upon this man who is about to give you 20 grand, because I don't know about everybody else's financial situation. Okay. But last time I checked, okay, 20 fucking K is a lot of money.
That's some change.
They're acting like 20 K. That's bullshit.
That's some change.
They was turning their nose up.
Yeah.
That was light paper. Like, they had it like that. Like, when you sharing a crib and your mother's paying half on it, okay, you can lose 20 grand. As a matter of fact, you need to fucking call this wedding off and go down to the Justice of the Peace and tie this knot and get your Uncle Earl, your daddy's youngest brother, to come down there
and do a cookout.
And barbecue one of them hogs, okay?
And stash his paper, because like you said, you're about to spend 150 grand on a wedding, and they ain't got no money between them.
Meanwhile, you can't even fuck in your own house regular. Yeah. Your mama coming in with her key.
Yeah, on regular. Yeah, anytime she feel like it.
Anytime. You at the crib, you can't even make relations to your old lady.
Right.
Because you don't know when her mama going to pop up. Y'all in your own house locking the door. Ain't near kid in the house. Y'all got the...
Putting the chain lock on.
Exactly. What are we doing here?
Yeah, so that blew my mind, man. Like, that whole thing, like Sean said, the fact that he's got all this, you know, for lack of a better term, baggage. I don't know if there's another term I can't think of right now, but like you said, if he was black, he wouldn't be none of
fam,
this.
There is. I'm saying this as a father. It should burn you to know. I can't even explain and articulate how much not seeing your children like
that's my point. For 10 years.
10 years, bro.
I can't even imagine that, son. That's like I can't.
That's unreal. That's unreal.
Yeah. And then the other one's once a month. Like you.
And he's not even, and it's not like he was saying we've been going back and forth to court for my visitation rights. None of that stuff. He's just saying, you know what? It sounded to me like that gal got an old man that told him they don't come around in no more.
Yeah, basically.
And might have went upside his head once or twice.
I'm their pappy now.
I'm the pappy now.
All
right, Jesus.
He's my chili. So, I mean, I just wanted to mention that. Did y'all watch Black Love?
I still have to catch up. I haven't watched it.
You watch it, bro? You didn't watch it.
Nah.
I watched it. I caught up to it. It's 3 episodes in. The known couples are Kirk Franklin and his wife, Grant Hill and Tamia.
And Sterling K. Brown, right?
Sterling K. Brown and his wife, and who's your soror, I believe. She went to Stanford. I think she pledged with the lady.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Eddie George and Taj. Those are like the famous couples.
Okay.
And Bart Scott, who used to play for the Jets. He was on, this is the first episode he was on. And then there's, you know, other couples that aren't, you know, famous or whatever. Oh, and old girl, who played and She's Gotta Have It, the lead.
The Nola Darling character
and her husband.
Okay.
And then again, then just black couples. And you know, this season, this last episode was a doozy. It was called Accountability. And you know, it started like the last season when the first episode was very lovey-dovey. You know, it's how we met and I knew when I seen her, I was going to marry. Oh, I'm sorry. The other famous couple is D.L. Hughley and his wife. I knew I was going to marry her and blah, blah, blah. And they do a whole episode of that. Then the second episode was a little thicker, like kind of like their come up, like, oh, so we met, we had no money and da 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 da, or like we broke up and then we came back together. But then this episode here was called Accountability. And it basically was about, for the most part, it was about cheating.
So I know Kirk Franklin shit was, woo.
Kirk didn't admit to no cheating. He didn't. I didn't say he didn't cheat. I said he didn't admit to it. DL did.
I made a face. Okay, that's what I heard. I heard that one of them, like, their whole shit.
DL said it. He's like, I cheated on her. I've done some terrible shit. I've been a terrible nigga. But then a couple of the other couples who weren't known, like, they're cheating shit. One couple, they're from New York. They live, I guess, in Atlanta now. Like, she was cheating on each other. And the woman that the guy was cheating with ended up, getting killed by her husband, who found out she was cheating.
Holy, like,
it was a whole crazy thing. Then somebody, that same guy may burn their house down.
Wow.
It was a whole crazy ass story. It was a whole crazy story. And then the wife admitted that she cheated on him and was.
So basically, this was a Tyler Perry movie.
A Tyler Perry movie, bro. It literally was a Tyler Perry movie. There was a couple of Tyler Perry stories. There was another story where there's another couple who's, this guy's a pastor, and he was fucking everything moving, and the wife is just sitting there like, I thought he's been married 3 times. She's been married twice. So she's like, well, I thought that this time he told me he was over that and he wasn't going to cheat no more. And I would make him read Bible verses with me every night. And it was crazy. You got to see it, man. Like,
I think I'm gonna watch it. I don't know that I put it on my DVR, so maybe it's on demand.
It's definitely on demand. It's definitely on demand.
Yeah, it's on demand.
This was like at a certain point, like some of the shit these couples are talking about, and I know everybody's like, well, we made it through, and we went to counsel. You know, the couple who said they had the fires and the killings and all that, they said they've been through like 10 counselors.
They better still be in counseling right now. That's the rest of my marriage, being counseling. Because every time I get mad, I'm going to be like, you got our motherfucking house burned down and you got a bitch killed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So,
like, every time.
So my thing was, like, at a certain point, I know, like, especially with black couples, I think it's black couples more than white couples. You always hear the stories like, your father used to do this. But, after a while, we made it through. And I mean, at a certain point, I'm like,
why?
Yeah, like, what are y'all hanging on? But the lady who was married to the pastor, who was a piece of shit, basically said, hey, I've been married twice. This is my second marriage. I don't want to do this again. So I'm just going to rock out.
I get that.
And it was kind of like, at least she was honest about it. Like,
to each their own.
Yeah, of course. Everybody's relationship is different.
If your shit is you would rather be in it with somebody, even if being in it with somebody means you going through some shit, just to know that there's another warm body in the crib. Some people that's their choice.
Yeah, yeah.
A nigga like me, you get my house burned down
and get a murder charge.
Yeah, and get somebody killed in the fucking process, which means your ass was being messy.
Messy.
That's the other thing. Like, because all that means is that you were being messy with the shit. Like, it's bad enough you cheated, but you were clearly being messy because now niggas got to file insurance claims and assault, and we on the news and shit.
Yeah, and the cops.
And no. I'm not doing that. I'm not, I lost my baby photos because of your fuck shit.
Yeah, no
I'm
doubt.
Not doing that.
Yeah, Nana, I ain't got no more pictures of Nana.
Cause of your ass. My fucking high school yearbooks.
It's gone. Up in flames, nigga. Like, my diplomas and, what I'm saying? So, yeah, it was just a trip, like, to see, like, the level, that some of these couples, kind of stick through to make it work. And one last couple, which was interesting, was Bart Scott and his wife, who looks like Nicki Minaj's, like, older sister, like, literally looks like Nicki, but Bart had done some heinous shit, got caught cheating, and you could tell by her, what she said, and her tone, and her body language, that she was not over it at all.
It might have been too fresh to do the show then.
Fresh. I just think he had been doing the shit over the years, and she was just at her wit's end. He's saying she's my rock, and she's rolling her eyes like, nigga, get the fuck out of here. Like, she's over it. Like, I'm like, I don't know if they're gonna, and even at the end, she was like, basically like, we'll see what happens.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, she wasn't like, I still...
That sounded to me like she got an exit strategy. She probably got a little Nike shoebox with a couple dollars up in there.
Right. Yep.
Just buy the head on out. She'd be down to her sister down in Maryland or
exactly,
something.
Exactly. down in Niecy House down, down in Raleigh, North Carolina. You know what I'm saying? I ain't don't no. I don't want to talk to him. Tell him I'll call him. I'll call him back. So you know, I mean, so yeah. So you know, when y'all get a chance to watch Black Love, it was kind of interesting. Let's talk a little bit about this this Roseanne thing. Roseanne the racist. Roseanne the racist. So Roseanne Barr's been, as they say on the Black Twitter, she's been what's the word called? Not troublesome.
Canceled.
No, I'm not canceled.
Problematic.
Problematic.
Nah, she's been
problematic for several years.
Problematic is when somebody says shit that makes you side eye them a little bit. She's been flat out fucking racist.
Agree.
Like and problematic is when you can maybe talk about it and maybe ignore it and you kind of want to give them a pass. She has been a fucking racist piece of
and
shit.
And not only, and you know, not that it makes it better, but not only racist to Black people, but like to Jews.
Anybody.
Like she took a picture wearing a Hitler outfit with burnt
in a,
cookies.
With an oven.
Yeah, I was like, yo, what like, I was stunned that she was even able to work after that picture, to be honest with you.
Apparently, somebody said it was satire in the context of the, like, I don't fucking know.
I don't know how that's satire to make fun of people who have literally burned in ovens. I don't see how that's satire on any level.
Right.
So this week she, tweeted out a what she called a joke, about Valerie Jarrett, who worked for President Obama, for, both terms, right? She worked for 8 years in the White House, correct?
Yeah, she worked the whole time, but she was chief of staff or chief advisor or something like that.
I think she was chief of staff.
But first of all, Valerie Jarrett ain't even doing nothing. Like that, this, and I think this is important. It's not like Valerie Jarrett was on TV. It's not like Valerie Jarrett is currently like running.
She's not living in the public eye.
Like Valerie Jarrett ain't even out here like that for her to be on.
She was down
Roseanne's
at Trader Joe's.
Mind.
Exactly.
Minding her motherfucking business. She had on her little Lululemon.
Exactly.
Yeah, like Valerie Jarrett ain't even out here to be on Roseanne's mind,
no.
which I think is important to just be like, this is how fucking. This is how much you're just looking for some shit to talk.
And so she made a joke, and I'm not quoting verbatim, but she said something to the effect of Valerie, like a Islamic terrorist mixed with Planet of the Apes equals VJ. Valerie
yeah.
She tweeted that.
Muslim Brotherhood.
Muslim Brotherhood, exactly. She tweeted that. So to their credit, within a couple of hours, man. I don't know if it was even that long. ABC canceled the Roseanne show,
which
was the number one show in the country.
Yeah, number one show, and their first number one sitcom in quite some time. But that swiftness of action suggested to me that they were already on like a okay, this is the last straw type situation, because I don't believe that a network that would green light that show in the first place, because none of this is new with Roseanne. This shit ain't shocking or surprising. Like,
yeah, they knew what they were getting.
Yeah, somebody pulled out that she tweeted basically the same shit about Susan Rice, you know, before. So and she's tweeted other shit. It's just that she hasn't tweeted it since the show's been on air. So none of this is surprising, but I don't think that a network cancels its number one show within hours. Like, I think it was like 3 hours. It was super fast.
Well,
like, I went in a meeting and I came out and that bitch was canceled. And I think that they must have really been at a point where they were like, all right, we can't let it rock anymore. Like, it's been too much backlash, because it was just not even a month ago that they showed an episode where the Connors think their neighbors are Islamic terrorists.
Mm-hmm. And made them go over there and prove that they weren't.
Right. And the backlash was so crazy that I really think that they were at a point where it was just like, all right, this is it. We got to pull the plug.
Their ratings, it's a little bit weird, but when you looked at the ratings, they pretty much lost
they were
about
dipping,
half.
Right?
Oh, they were definitely on a decline. And when I say, I think they were getting like maybe, I think the first episode, it was something like 18 million people tuned in. And by the last episode, May 22nd, I think it was like 10 million. Like, that's a significant drop. And I'm sure that there was some steady decline over the course of the season. I mean, listen, I mean, you know, ABC is, you know, this is a Disney network. There was going to be a level of, you know, they just can't have certain shit happening. Like, just that's just the reality of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, to Nas' point, because it happened so swiftly, this was already a conversation. Yeah. This wasn't a con. Right. This did not go from, oh, we're excited to have season two,
right,
to we're canceling you in a 2-hour span.
Right.
This was definitely like, it looks to me like they were probably, hey, what's the cost? Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, is this diminishing returns at this point? You know, what's happening here? And I think she had started to do, you know, she did a press run initially when the show, you know, aired, and it was, you know, let's be cuddly with the racist tour. Right. And, yeah, and that's kind of what it was. And they put her on all of the platforms that they own. And that's kind of what happens. Right. But, you know, eventually she is who she is.
She
you
is
know
what I'm saying? Like, she is.
And just like when you looked at the tweets that she sent out following up, she sends out a Photoshop doctored picture of Whoopi Goldberg in a shirt that is displaying Trump sort of blowing his brains out, mm, right? Everyone knows this is a doctored photo, right? It looks doctored, right? Right. And of course, she retweets that and talks about hypocrisy. She starts to go at Sarah Gilbert. She right. starts to go at the kid who plays DJ.
Well, let me back you up and
Wanda Sykes.
Well, let me back you up a little bit, because first she retweeted those fake tweets. She retweeted a couple of fake tweets. Then she erased the one with Whoopi. She retweeted some other shit that was also fake. Then she apologized to Valerie Jarrett. Then she said she was leaving Twitter. Then she came back and told her followers not to be mad and not to try to defend her, yeah, and said she was on Ambien. Then she came back and went at Sarah Gilbert and DJ and everybody else. So it's like, bitch, what the fuck? Like, it's like watching the whole cycle from, what is it? The cycle of acceptance or whatever that mm-hmm. she's grieving, watching the whole grief cycle, except with a racist person taking place. And the crazy shit is like, everybody was like, fuck this bitch. Like, Webster's Dictionary yesterday tweeted, who stays clapping at people on the low, like that official Webster's Dictionary tweeted out the definition of the word canceled. This morning, the pharmaceutical manufacturing company that makes Ambien tweeted out a statement that, like, while many drugs do have side effects, it doesn't make anybody a racist. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. Like, nobody was on this bitch's side. Like, nobody.
You're catching L's across the board, as she deserves.
And a bunch of networks have put Roseanne back in syndication.
They took them all off.
They pulled it all right back off.
Hulu and
Logo.
CMT took them off as well. Now, you know how fucking awful you got to be for the
country. CMT to pull your shit?
Yeah. Like,
but that was probably also, a Viacom. But, you know, it's still all Viacom, yeah, CBS, like that whole shit.
So, I mean, I also want to say, too, you know, look, I don't have any shots at Wanda Sykes for taking that job and putting food on her table. A lot of people like to stand on their moral high ground and sling shots at people and, you know, what they do for a living, right? Now, I definitely think that...
I think she was a token, though. They used her.
I think that she was a token. I think there was also another token, and I'm going to get to that. But I definitely think that she was a token because they were able to point to her. Like, we have diversity we can't be more diverse than a Black lesbian. Right?
you know
what I'm saying? So I get that, right? But then to me... You know, to say that you're leaving the show a few hours after it was canceled.
I think she said it before.
I couldn't find the timeline.
I saw that
her tweet is kind of what started the avalanche. Like,
yeah,
she tweeted, like, I'm leaving the show.
I would bet everything in my pocket that Wanda Sykes not coming back to a show like named Roseanne was not the deciding factor as to whether or not they were going to cancel.
No, there's some speculation that once Wanda said she wasn't coming back, some other people were more willing to jump ship.
Maybe. May be true internally,
right?
But I'm saying in terms of ABC, that's my point.
But I will say I was going into a meeting like at 12, and I saw her tweet before I went in, and then after I came out, Roseanne was canceled. I don't think she was the catalyst, but there are a lot of people saying that the fact that your one black hair writer on staff is like, I'm out, definitely didn't help. And it was also after after Wanda made her statement, then like Sarah made her statement, which Sarah Gilbert, listen, I know you're gay. I know that. I'm completely aware of that, but I've been side eyeing you this whole time because Sarah is liberal as fuck and she is really outspoken. We can hear you, Jeff. Sarah is liberal as fuck and she's really outspoken. But like, you gotta know who Roseanne is.
Yeah, just that, but like also too, man, like I just feel like she's been doing this. Why is this the line in the sand for you?
Right.
Now speaking up. It rang a little. It was awkward to me, but again, I'm not gonna kill her for taking that job. You know, listen, man. She said
Sarah Gilbert don't need no check.
Wanda. I'm talking about Wanda. Okay, Wanda. You know what I'm saying? Wanda said they offered her $250 at Netflix. So she, you know what I'm saying? But also too, what I want to say is I don't like the way that the woman. I think it's. The ABC executive,
the black woman. Yeah.
Yes. What's her name? Channing something?
Dunning, I believe her name is.
Okay.
I don't like the way it is being positioned.
Like a black woman did this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why not? Because ABC is a board, right? Like it's not, she was not the deciding hammer.
Well, Bob Iger has said more than one time, he's like, look, the buck stops with me and I made the final decision.
Yes.
But he made the final decision.
My point is a lot of publications, particularly a lot of the blogs and a lot of the sort of black publications they're tweeting out that
like she did this.
Like she did this and did this alone. And I don't I don't want her to have that pressure on her. Yeah. Because the flip side is, if that's the case, then she fucking greenlit them.
Well, a lot of people have been saying that. Like there have been black women specifically that have been like, yeah, okay, so she was part of the deciding factor to put the show on in the first place. So, okay, good, she took it off. But a lot of people have been like that. Like, don't make her a hero now because it means she was part of.
And to me, just let her be the executive.
Right.
Like, just let her be the executive. She has some say. She wields some power. I'm positive that, you know, she can, you know, what she says matters. But like, I don't want this to be this sort of, you know, like she's, you know, like she's this Olivia Pope of ABC. Like she's all,
but,
you know, like stop.
But I also understand why from...
An optics perspective,
it was important for ABC to let her be the one to make the statement since it was based on a disparaging comment about a black woman, right?
Her name is Channing Dungey, by the way.
But I understand that as an optical, you know, thing. Right. The reality is that the show should have been canceled based on its own merit. I didn't need them to present it as, okay, you can go out there and do the firing now. You know what I'm saying? Like, she should have been, the show should have been canceled. They didn't have a choice. They couldn't rebound from that. Yeah. They couldn't rebound.
The advertisers were probably running out the door in droves.
Because a boycott was coming. The call was coming to organize for a boycott. So that was on the way.
But my thing is, like, hey man, like I ain't mad at them putting Channing out front, man. Let that black woman take them props for getting rid of this skanky ass racist fraud, man.
That's fine. But then when it is undeserved and there are L's to be held, guess who else they gonna put out there?
If you're gonna be the president of ABC, then you already know this is part of the game.
I'm not saying it's wrong.
You're the president of the whole goddamn network. You know when L's is coming, you're gonna get the windfall.
Let me clarify. I'm not saying it's wrong, and I completely understand why they would have done it. I just would have liked to have seen it being done because it was the right thing to do, right? And being presented as it was the right thing to do, not in in kind of the way it, that it presented. Just in my opinion, mm-hmm. I understand it. I completely understand it.
I like it. Peace to you, Sharon, Channing Dungey.
Why are you making it seem like I ain't saying peace to her?
Wait. How did Jeff get Sharon from Channing? Can we talk about that part?
Because he's old black. That's why that nigga was making so much noise. That nigga was over there shaking some sunflower seeds.
You know, Shannon. What they share? Sharon.
Oh, Lord.
The Bobby and Jeannie's daughter.
You know? Lord.
So, fuck Roseanne. You know, good riddance. She's going to really go ham on Twitter, I think, now, because
Fox gonna give her a show. She gonna definitely be on Fox.
Yeah, I'm sure she's got plenty of paper, but her paper train has stopped. So yeah, she's gonna get on Fox and act ignorant because that's what they do. But it's funny because even some of the scumbags on Fox was like, "Yo, ma, like you wildin'." You know what I mean? Like even some of the hardcore Fox people.
Tommy fucking Lauren said that she was wildin'. Like,
I didn't even see that.
That's because they fuck all them. That shit is bullshit. They like to throw out a bone so they can have something in the press to point back to when it's time for them to show receipts about them trying to be fair. They full of shit. Fuck all of them.
True. And but of course, you know, Trump was supporting her. Of course. Like, nigga, stay out. Like, just, oh my God, I miss us having like a real.
And then she tries, and then to like come back, and then she tries to blame the Ambien. Like,
yeah,
Ambien made her racist. So of course, they released a statement saying,
"Yeah, Ambien was like, nah,
we have a few side effects, but being a racist is
not one of them."
Yeah, they were like, "Nah,
fuck out."
Yeah, come on, man.
Did y'all see the story about this the cat in France who climbed the building?
Yeah.
Yeah.
22-year-old cat. I'm trying to see. I don't. It's Mamadou. Mamadou Gassama. He's an Italian refugee or Italian refugee.
No, he's from Mali.
Yeah, but he went through. He lived in Italy first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, went to Italy first, and then he came to France. And was trying to figure out a way to get citizenship, and actually had not recently applied for an internship with a fire department. It hadn't gone through yet, but that was his way of trying to kind of get into the French. It would be a 10-month internship with the Paris Fire and Rescue Services. It would pay him like $920 a month. And he happened to be walking by this building that was on, and there was a baby dangling from a balcony. The baby actually apparently was playing like Pokemon or something like that, and then I guess on a phone or something.
Boy, was trying to chase him. I thought it was like a baby.
No, there was like, I think the baby was like 2 years old, 1 or 2 years old.
Lord,
it was a baby, you know, strong enough to kind of hold on to something. And this dude like literally scales a building in maybe 30 seconds?
It might have been more like 15.
It was lightning fast.
Like a building. Like he's
climbing up over balconies, pulling himself up. That shit was incredible.
This nigga's like a super athlete. You know what I'm saying?
I would love to think that I have that kind of courage.
Yeah.
But that shit there?
That was crazy, bro.
That was unbelievable.
And it looked to be like 8 to 10 stories high. Like it was high.
No, he went up. It looked like he was on about the fourth floor, maybe, but this was not sort of a regular apartment building. Like these were really big gaps.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like he had to really stand up and jump to the bottom and climb all the way up. Like they were really, really big. It wasn't like in some buildings, you know what I'm saying? It's not really not that far away.
Right.
But this shit was crazy. And what was even more crazy was like, dude, there's a couple that's like 2 feet away from the baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, right on
the side of the pillar kind of thing.
I'm like, fam, that baby can't weigh more than 10 pounds.
Right.
Like, there's no way you just couldn't reach your arm around to grab that baby.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of having a man scale a whole season.
And I also, listen, I don't want to judge because, again, you know, when things are crazy, you know, people react differently. You know, maybe he thought if I reach out for the baby, maybe the baby lets go. I don't catch him. You know what I'm saying? The baby died. I don't know. But it just was weird to me to see that. But apparently he was given citizenship.
Yeah, by Macron directly. Oh, by the way, this is a clarified story. I misspoke. So the boy's father, who lived alone with the little boy, had left him alone to go to the store, and then he stayed outside and played Pokemon Go. The father.
Okay.
So the boy's father was arrested
as he should have been, of
neglecting the parent.
That's literally worst case scenario.
That's the shit that your grandmother would say. Don't you leave them babies in that house.
He's gonna climb out that window. Literally, worst case scenario.
You go to the store, leave the baby alone, which is insanity.
It's the baby.
But then you don't even rush back. You stay on the street and play Pokemon Go.
Chilling.
I'm
like, yo, the baby gonna be okay for a minute. Meanwhile, you look up and your baby is literally
dangling.
I just need to understand, like, was like the baby just in the crib? Like, did he just leave the baby with some juice? I'm saying, like, what was the end game here, my nigga? Like, yo, I'm gonna leave you some juice. I'm gonna leave you some Cheerios. I'll be right back.
And I'm out.
You know what I'm saying? Don't fuck up nothing.
And I'm out.
He probably had him sitting in front of the TV watching a little show.
Probably had him in a high chair, and old boy climbed out of that shit in a blink of an eye.
Yeah, looking for his father. Hit the balcony, like, you know, don't know no better. So he got citizenship, but it's interesting because this opens up a whole thing, because I said he got citizenship, which is great, but France is going through this massive kind of nationalist movement.
As we are.
And one of their things, as ours is kicking immigrants out of the country. Their immigrants that they focus on are African immigrants of African descent, usually.
Right.
You have a ton of people from different countries in Africa that come there to do labor and try to get away from the strife in their countries in Africa, and they're turning them away and kicking them out. Italy is worse. Italy is like, those guys are like killing immigrants and not getting charged. Like, they like killing guys and like capsizing boats, and they're more heinous even than the French. And so this opened up a kind of thing, because it's like, okay, this guy got citizenship, but like, what about the rest of the people who he was one of until 2 days ago? You know, so it's a kind of a thing, like, is this going to open up a door for more people to get citizenship by doing heroic feats? Or like, you know, it's kind of crazy, you know, so yes, so. But it's a very interesting story. I'm happy for him, you know.
And I mean, listen, I'm happy for him. And I mean, I don't necessarily have a feel good feeling about this in terms of, you know, I don't think that, you know, a test to become a citizen should require you scaling a building and saving a baby.
Right,
should
require abnormal heroic.
Like, it'd be
what the fuck?
You'd be a fucking Spider-Man, you know what I'm saying?
Come on.
What'd y'all think about Kim Kardashian going to visit Donald Trump?
The dumbest shit in the whole fucking world. Kim been doing stupid shit thinking that she doing good shit all week though. So, like, whatever. That, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, listen, if it's gonna affect any kind of change at all whatsoever, God bless, but like literally there's nobody else that could have gone other than Kim.
To talk about prison reform.
And I think what bothers me about it personally is Kim's proximity to John Legend, when this is what John does. Like, the motherfucker has organizations that are built around prison reform and incarceration reform. Yeah, so I think that's what bothered me personally. I mean, I would have been bothered anyway, but I was especially bothered because of that. Did you have Chrissy have him slide you some paperwork, at least, like something? That really bothered me.
I don't think she did any of that sort of stuff. I think, you know, and look, I don't hate Kim. I'm not one of those people. I'm not one of those. I hate all of the Kardashians. I'm not one of those. But I think this is one of the times when, you really have to learn to separate your celebrity, versus real shit. right? And I think this is very real shit. And I think this is one of the times where you say, hey, man, I'm probably not equipped and qualified to have a substantial, you know, a conversation of substance, and what I can do to focus here. You know, maybe I can sort of create a summit. And to me, you know, having a seat with Donald Trump, I mean, those are, I've always felt uncomfortable with these presidential sit downs because a lot of these issues that we have really need to be focused on in the states that we need to like lock into, you know, bail reform, shit like that. You know, like we never really, we often try to hit a 5-run home run.
Yeah.
And we never want to bunt and we never want to get a single and steal a base, right? Like we never want to work. So, I mean, listen, she might get somebody pardoned, you know, if I'm
those folks.
That's
what she's trying to do.
Yeah, she's trying to get that lady.
One person pardoned,
right? Yeah, this one particular great-grandmother.
And that's cool. That's cool and the game. However, part of my problem is that I know she don't know what the fuck she's talking about, and the president don't know what the fuck he's talking about. So who is the expert in the room?
But this is the thing. But for me, the issue becomes like, you know, look, if I'm that woman's family, no one else matters.
True.
So I understand, right? But I'm saying that there has to be a conversation that is about the greater good, not about trying to isolate and pick and choose these very feel-good stories.
That's like what I'm saying. So who's having that conversation? Because I'm
no one's having that conversation. This entire thing is going to be about.
It's a big publicity stunt.
I don't. I'm not saying this woman doesn't deserve to be free, but that's all this is about.
Yeah, this and one person.
They're going to sign that paper. That woman will probably be home in time for the holidays, in time to, you know, be with her babies for Thanksgiving, and it'll be a feel-good story. And guess what? Guess what? That will give black conservatives their talking points that Donald Trump is fair. This is all this is about. This is like the extreme case. So now we're going to be giving him credit, right?
Yeah.
Right.
For pardoning a woman who was unfairly sentenced, and we're going to call that prison reform.
Yeah.
Come on, man. What are we doing here, man?
Yeah, it's bullshit. I mean, we could do two shows on how fucked up this White House is, man. It's like one thing after another. I don't even really watch the news that much no more because it pisses me off so much.
It ain't no news. The news is no longer TMZ. The news is not about information. It is about affirmation. People watch those news stations to get confirmation of the things they already believe and that they already feel. This is not about passing information. It's not. It's just not.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, she and I'm sure her husband behind the scenes is just using this as a publicity stunt. Hey, great day to go up 2 days before this nigga's album comes out. You know, like,
and honest to God, I think she's one of those people that does not have a clue that she is doing is so preposterous and so ridiculous.
Oh no, she thinks she's saving the world.
That's my point. That's where it gets weird, right? Is because this person is not like they're faking the funk in terms of, oh, I really don't know. I mean, certain shit that I just feel like, I mean, you know, you ain't qualified for. If somebody asked me to come do a fucking A&R panel.
Yeah,
you know. I know
right.
Say, you should probably talk to Jeff. Right. You know, Lil Young Man and all them new albums and. You know, I don't know none of that shit.
You say Lil Young Man.
Yeah, Lil Young Man. little nigga, he's 7 years old. He's from the Bay.
He popping.
He popping.
Nigga streaming crazy, nigga. Yeah, so I mean, that shit's just, I mean, since we're talking about her, we might as well go on and get it to her, having this back and forth, allegedly her, having this back and forth with Rhymefest.
Oh, I believe that was her.
I believe it was him. I think it was Kanye. But anyway.
No, I believe that was her.
I believe he was feeding her.
Yeah, but I believe he was typing.
Yes, I believe he was feeding her.
Okay. Back and forth with Rhymefest about the state of Donda's house, which is Kanye West's mother's charity.
No, it's a charity named after Kanye's mother. Donda herself was never, she was dead by the time it started. It is a charity that was created in her name that is focused on...
It's like a Hale House kind of thing, youth. Right?
Well, Hale House is residential, but it was focused. It's like an enrichment program. There was like a digital component, an arts component, a music component. That's right. For basically underprivileged youth in Chicago. And then Rhymefest's wife, who is an educator and who was in academia, she's the executive director. Rhymefest is also part of the exec board. And then recently, Rhymefest bought Donda's house, like Kanye's childhood home, to actually make it the headquarters for Donda's house. But Donda's house existed separate from the physical structure.
Okay. So this thing came up and it was a lot of back and forth because it started with the Pusha T beef and Drake.
No, it didn't. Listen. It started with the Whitney cover. After the Whitney cover, that Friday morning, Donda's house put out a statement and Rhymefest retweeted it, saying that they were starting to get a lot of backlash because of Kanye's behavior, and that if people were going to boycott Kanye, they asked that they leave Donda's house out of it, keeping in mind that they're a separate organization from Kanye and they rely on contribution. Now, that was Friday afternoon. That was before Drake's diss track even dropped.
Drake just came out Saturday.
No, it came out Friday evening, I think, or whatever. It was early Friday.
No, it might have been Friday. It was Friday, actually.
It was Friday night. But, yeah. So once Drake's thing came out, then Rhymefest was like, hey, while you send the invoices, can you get Kanye to put in on Donda's house? And that's when it started, like the whole
thing. Okay, the back and forth shit. So a lot of accusations went back and forth and, you know, Kim allegedly, I still say, I'm going to say allegedly, got online talking about, you know, Rhymefest had on fake Yeezys and he got kicked out of the studio in Wyoming and, you know, he's, you know, basically a terrible nigga, blah, blah, blah. And Rhymefest sent a long statement, you know, the gist of it is, hey, you know, we're out here trying to do good work. You know, Kanye hasn't participated in any of this in a very long time. And Kim, like, you're mad out of line for even talking shit when you never have even visited this facility.
Right. And he also...
Or done anything for any of these children, including not even tweeting or retweeting some stuff about Donda's house. But now you're talking about you want to take it over. And he's like, well, if you want to take it over, feel free. Like, come on through. Like, you know. Right.
Well, she didn't even say she was going to take it over. She said that she was going to take it so that her kids can run it. The oldest of whom is four.
Yeah.
Like North is four. And basically where Kim was coming back was that Rhymefest first retweeted the Drake invoice and made a comment like, can you get Kanye to run us some money? And then Rhymefest went on to say, that Kanye had helped them get a big contribution early on, but that he hadn't contributed to Donda's house since then. And when he tried to talk to Kanye about it, Kanye said, quote, fuck them kids in Chicago, or fuck the Chicago youth, or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's when Kim came back, and Kim was basically like you said, like, you know, you saw us recently, why didn't you mention this then? Last time I saw you, you was in the studio with fake Wheezy's, and you were reaching out to Kanye, and you can't keep hitting us up for money. That can't be your fundraising arm, et cetera, et cetera. So like you said, then Rhymefest put out a statement, or not even a statement. He typed some shit up and put it in a screen grab saying it's a statement, makes it sound bigger than it is, and added Kim and really threw her shade, saying that, like, he said something like, Donda, who personally mentored me and who I knew. And the implication there was like, you ain't even know this chick.
Which is true. Donda passed away when Kanye was still with Amber.
Right. And, you know, also saying, you want to take it, like you said, you want to take it over, that's fine. You know, your husband reached out to me to ask me to work on this album. I was trying to talk about Donda's house. All he wanted to do was talk about the album, you know. And then someone else who had been in the studio, I'm not sure if he was a writer or engineer, but he commented off of what Kim said about the Wheezy's too. Like, yo, your man was in there with a private chef like, while niggas was starving, who had come to fuck. He's like, I was in that session. Your man was in there with a private chef eating prosciutto wrapped melon while the rest of the niggas that he asked to come down here and contribute to the album was starving. Like, looking at us, snacking, chilling.
Yeah, like you know? Y'all niggas good?
Yeah, like, all right, what else? So anyway, I mean, Kim then tried to come back and be like, let me break this all the way down. And then tried to back the fieriness up and speak a little bit more like a normal person. But in my opinion, she lost that round. Because people were like, yeah, Rhymefest is coming at you. Like, we have this organization, Kanye. We need you to be doing some good. And Kim's response is, ha, 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 you got fake Wheezy's
on. Yeah, you got fake sneakers on. You know what I'm saying? What'd you think about it, bro?
I got a slightly unpopular opinion.
Here you
about
go.
This.
Here you go.
I think I agree with both of you on everything you said about Kim. It just wasn't her place. She really should have just fucking sat this one out. And especially comparing, like, to go ask about fake sneakers when this is a person who's boots on the ground with youth. And this is what they're trying to figure out, right? Like, that's just, it was silly. But I do have a bit of an unpopular opinion about this. One of the things that I think that you do and you have to keep in mind as the leader of an organization, especially an organization that is, molding young people and showing that leadership, is that you can't be messy in public, right? You really shouldn't be messy in public. I feel like they had public conversations about intimate, private things that the kids that go to that house that are mentored in those programs shouldn't be privy to. It is not okay for the leader of an organization, be it on paper or the face of it, to basically throw someone under the bus like that in the way he did with Kanye, with asking for that money. Right. And I mean, with the whole Drake thing, like pulling Drake into it. And that's like, to me, like, bro, like that's not OK. It's just not OK to be. I also think that it is unfair. And I think that it is not OK for an organization's charitable fundraising efforts to simply be, hey, we need some cash. Like, we need an influx of cash. Now, I don't want to make it seem like I think it was that cut and dry. And for clarity, I want to be clear. I think that these guys are really boots on the ground, that they're doing the fucking work.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is that nonprofits are not simply just about doing the work. They have got to run like a business. They simply are just taxed differently, and they are not profitable. They're not operating to run a profit. But that doesn't mean that the fundraising and the financial arm are not important. They are vital to the lifeblood of your organization. If you don't have it, then there's a reason why colleges have, you can get a BA in nonprofit organizations in these sorts of fields of work, because it's real work.
Yeah, but I think that's the thing. Like, fundraising is a real work, and I hear what you're saying, and you're not wrong. You're right. But I think that's the thing, is that they don't have a huge executive staff, and it seems like the staffers that they do have been more to execute these programs. Like, I think they don't have, they don't,
I was just gonna
have a whole,
no, I was absolutely going to get to that, because I think what you have here is, I think you have creative people looking to do the right thing, and they do not have the business structure and the back end that is required to sustain an organization. Like, that shit is real work, my nigga. Like, it is not a game. Like,
yeah, but the thing is, bro, like, And this is where me and you, you know, where our fork in the road comes. I'm not, again, I'm not saying you're wrong, but the one of the reasons that they don't have, they're not, they don't have that is because, you know, I think they were, they thought they were promised some paper from Kanye and some other people to be able to afford to do these things. And none of that stuff has been forthcoming. So they're really like just working with like, you know, they're spitting shoelaces. They don't have, they don't have the money to hire somebody to do that. That, matter of fact, that lawyer that was, tweeting, he said he did basically $200,000 worth of work pro bono for the organization because they don't have the money.
I understand that, and that happens. And accountants do stuff pro bono. They can quantify their time on their taxes. Mm-hmm. They can, you know, you can have events that are not going to be like the backbreaking cost of these events. Like you can go to public spaces. Public spaces are at a great discount for 501c3 legitimate nonprofits. Museums. I'm speaking, and I'm saying this as someone who has intimate knowledge of working with a nonprofit. It is vastly different when you go to public spaces. So again, I understand the point is that we look at nonprofits, right? And we think we see these galas and we see all of these very, you know, sort of privileged people and they're sipping champagne and they're eating filet mignon and they're doing all of this for the poor children, right? And it looks fucking foolish, right? The reality is that people who are boots on the ground, who love these kids, want to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
They are vital to organizations. They are needed. Money is also needed, and we always tap dance around money. And guess what, man? When you have a organization that is completely dependent on one source of income or two, we donate to a charity in Haiti. Mm-hmm. This dude just lost Digicel. I don't know, you know, Digicel is a huge sponsor. That's a big company. He just lost Digicel. Like, the point is, the camp don't stop because Digicel ain't. You gotta keep fostering relationships. This is why you go out. This is why you go into those worlds. This is why you have to navigate those spaces to understand the loopholes, the tricks of the trade. How do we get here? How do we do this? I think that people, again, when people mean well, it is very difficult to say not doing something right. Right. Because we know that they mean well. They're keeping these kids off the street. They're helping them. They're facilitating them. They're giving them confidence, giving them opportunities, giving them resources. I understand that. Guess what? You still go out here and you got to go to these fundraisers for the local politicians. You got to hobnob. You got to put your black tie on. Guess what? You got to shake hands and you got to kiss me. I'm not saying he didn't do that, Jeff.
I'm saying the lawyer said they did fundraisers.
Okay. Fundraisers
are not gala.
Yes. Fundraisers are not galas. A bake sale is a fund.
Galas are $10,000 a table.
Galas are the difference. Galas can absolutely balance your P&L sheet. Like in one night, because there is a pressure. We just went to a gala for the Urban League. Right. Like there is not necessarily like the ultimate sense of pressure. Right. But when you're at these events, there is an expectation when you come to these events that you are to open your checkbook. Mm. There is a reason they have them. There is a reason that the culture of these galas exists. It's because, dude, they just had a huge gala for the Robin Hood Foundation. They had that shit in the fucking Jacob Javits Center. Now, I'm not comparing that. I understand that they have limited resources, right? But you have to find ways to have initiatives during the course of the year. It's not just, you know, you can't just depend on this gala. You can't just depend on this one thing. There has to be multiple ways for you to generate income and generate donations for your charity to sustain. Or, I'm not saying that. Think there was any misappropriation.
Are you breaking up? You're breaking up a little bit, bro.
I'm not, you know, misappropriating or any of that. An owner is giving you hundreds of thousands of dollars, if that, for years.
Mm-hmm.
That shit, and And for this time, cope. Like you, I was, you couldn't.
You should keep breaking up. It should keep breaking up.
I don't know if he can hear us, Sean. I'm not sure what happened. You were good before, but now you're starting to break up pretty badly.
That's because you're talking that bullshit, nigga.
I'll be able to edit it though. But Sean, you started breaking up, and I think did he freeze?
Yeah, I think he froze up on us.
I think he froze. Oh, okay, now. Okay.
That's because we don't hear all that shit about them goddamn gala dinners and the chickens and. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying, bro. I know what you're saying, but again, I just don't understand how they were supposed to do all that if they don't have the money to.
You grow it, Jeff. You grow it.
It's like, yo, it feels chicken egg.
You grow it based on what? Like I said, they, again, I'm talking shit because I don't know, but from what Ryan Fest said, it felt like that they thought they were going to have, you know, a certain amount of money coming from Kanye's, your place.
Yes, from Kanye's donations.
Right.
But he hasn't done it. He hasn't done it in years. Right.
I understand that. My point is you cannot run an organization that is completely dependent on one person.
Here's what I took away from it. It wasn't just that they were relying on Kanye's donations. They expected Kanye's support so that they could get donations from other people. And he was saying like they wouldn't even fucking tweet about it. And he actually said that, why do you think this is the first time you've heard of Donda's House? We couldn't even get them to do a goddamn social post. So I think it wasn't just so much like, we expected Kanye to give us the money, but more like, dog, you're supposed to be the face of this shit. We need you to help us get to these big name donors, right?
Well,
and you're not even doing that.
I don't disagree with that. Like, and I think that a part of that too is understanding and navigating that space. Yo, man, I need you to get me into the room with Adidas's philanthropic arm.
Exactly.
Who's the head honcho at Adidas that's the philanthropic?
Right.
Who's the head honcho at so-and-so?
Doesn't give a fuck about. And I think the other thing is, regardless of this Donda's House shit, the fact of the matter is that Kanye does what Kanye wants to do. Kanye does what's going to benefit Kanye. And Kanye really, and that's what I think was pissing off a lot of people, is that Kanye was talking shit about Chicago when he was on his Trump shit a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, nigga, you're not doing nothing. You know? So it's kind of that thing. Yeah. Like, what altruistic thing have you ever done, ever? Like, or at least in the last decade?
I think this is a perfect time for them to rebrand that organization. I think they have made it very clear. Yes, I think they have made it very clear that they have distanced themselves. I think they should be active in the community that cares about them. You know, another thing I want to say too is like, you stop looking for the 5-run home run.
Yeah.
You might not get that $60,000 check. And guess what? That $60,000 check stipulations, you could only spend it on this. You could only do it for that. You know what I'm saying? Like cultivate your folks that are going to be consistent donors and also be boots on the ground, mm-hmm. like the lawyer who was giving pro bono work, an accountant who was willing to give some pro bono work. You got to do those things. And again, I'm not saying that they didn't, but that's a part of growing an organization. Okay. And guess what? 5 years, that's a fucking baby. Okay.
Right.
5 years is a baby. 5 years is a baby.
As an organization, it is.
That's literally, I've seen people, you know, maybe by year five, maybe they get some office space. Like for the most part, people start this shit at their kitchen tables.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. I just want to break in here and say, even though it's off topic, Harvey Weinstein has been indicted of rape. That's just come down.
It's lit.
So for all y'all, and I know this is none of our listeners because y'all are more enlightened than this, but for all these motherfuckers who go on and on about the Kells and about Cosby and be like, but Weinstein ain't, but this one ain't, but this one ain't. Well, guess what, motherfuckers?
Weinstein is.
It's popping.
So we might as well end this thing with Pusha and Drake. Talking all kind of Kardashian type of shit anyway. So Push and Drake have had a big old rap battle beef, that escalated from this weekend past, which is great because of Memorial Day weekend. Push's album came out, Friday. So he's getting a nice boost from it. Pusha said some shit on a song on her his album called Infrared about Drake not writing his own rhymes and so on and so on and so forth. Drake responded with a song on Friday called Druppy Freestyle, where he goes at Pusha for being a fake ass drug dealer, and he goes at Kanye for a lot of shit, and, you know, kind of validates his writing by saying, how can you say I don't write my own shit when I wrote for your man? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, so he kind of squashed that, but in that
no,
song,
but also admitting that he doesn't write for his shit and throwing Quentin, the ghostwriter, like, completely, like, I basically took this nigga out of Kroger and gave him an opportunity type
yeah.
shit.
Yeah, well, you kind of did.
Which Quentin had to drop the track today.
Yeah, because Quentin's basically like, damn, I was just minding my business.
Like, nigga, I was just over here chilling. Like,
exactly. So that happened. And then in that song, Drake mentioned Virginia Williams, who I guess is Pusha's now fiance, I guess.
Fiance, yeah.
And that caused Pusha a lot of angst. So he came with his song called The Son of Adidon, which is allegedly a supposed to be Drake's line through Adidas, and his alleged son's name is Adonis.
Adonis, yeah.
Yeah, so he claims it's a combination of the two, and Pusha on this record goes ham about
everything.
About Drake's dad being on the ground, about Drake's mom never being married again, about 40, Drake's producer having MS and, you know, being on the clock to die, about just, you know, a lot of harsh topics. So what do we think about this?
I think that Drake's form of so Drake's Druppy Freestyle started a whole conversation on the timeline between old head rap purists and newer rap fans about the whole ghostwriter topic, right? Because obviously for us old niggas, any admission of ghostwriting whatsoever invalidates you as an MC. But my argument was Drake ain't an MC. Like, he's never been like a really hard hitting lyrical dude. The nigga raps in fucking memes and subtweets. But he is a social media rapper. He's a good artist. We know he has a pen because he's written for other people, not just in hip hop. Like, he wrote Unthinkable with Alicia and Carrie Keys. Mm. So we know he has a pen game, and we know he knows how to connect to his artist, and we know he knows how to paint a picture, but his shit ain't really deep, and it's not really super clever, and it's not really super witty. It's just very relevant. So he's kind of like, I likened him to a LL in the 90s where, like, he's...
Uh-oh, don't talk about LL now, bro.
No, you know I love LL. I love LL.
We talking about no Tide now.
But y'all know I love LL. But I likened him to LL because LL was rapping for ladies and for niggas trying to get ladies. But then if you pushed him, he pull it out. Now, LL started as a B-boy. Okay, fine. Now, LL started as a B-boy and he started as more of a hardcore rapper, but that was the 80s when everybody did that shit, right? But anyway, back to Drake. So I don't really have a problem with Quentin wrote for Drake, didn't write for Drake, because by some of these people's standards, a lot of these rappers have ghostwriters. And I think we talked about this before, actually, on the show. A lot of these rappers have ghostwriters by these people's standards, where they're basically like, anybody who wrote a lyric for you is a ghostwriter. That's not really a fair assessment. But all that said, Drake's shit, even his shit was meek. It's kind of lighthearted, right? It's like, yeah, I'm gonna take some jabs at you, but I'm gonna throw some memes up. It's gonna be some wordplay. It's gonna be some whatever. But he ain't really hitting niggas in the chest. Like, yes, he brought the fiance up, but that wasn't really hard hitting. Pusha came back with like some super ugly Ether era ass nastiness that we really haven't seen in hip hop disses in at least 15 years. Like, we really haven't seen this level of absolutely nothing's not on the table. And I don't really, like, Drake's career is going to be fine. He ain't going to take a hit, but I don't know how he comes back from this, because he doesn't have it in him lyrically to respond to this. He doesn't.
Well, I don't agree with that. I think he definitely has it in him lyrically to respond. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know what he's going to say. I just know that whenever he's presented with these situations up to this point, you know, and it could change, But up to this point, he hasn't lost in this.
But when has it been this ugly?
No, never been this harsh. It's never been this harsh. But also his him and his squad are pretty shrewd. So I think that they knew that, of course, they didn't know what Pusher was going to say, but they knew mentioning Pusher's girl was going to really get under Pusher's skin. I'm not saying he didn't know that he was going to come back to talk about his mom and all, but he knew it was going to be going to cause something. I feel like he's almost baited. He baited him in like, okay. Not all cards are really on the table now. Like Pusher saying all cards on the table, but it's like, but Pusher, that goes both ways.
But what else is there to even say about Pusher though?
I have no idea.
That's my point. I just don't see.
But what do people think there was to say about Meek? Nobody really thought there was anything to really say about him.
But the thing about Meek wasn't really so much what Drake said. It was how Drake said it. And it was the fact that you could find memes and all that other shit to support it. Like basically he was calling Meek a loser, and Meek already had a bunch of people that didn't really like him anyway. Push has harder core fans than Meek, and Push is more established than Meek. Like Push has been in this longer than Drake. I don't think you can really discount the fact that Push is seen out here as like a really established lyricist. You know, some people think he's one of the best that are still around. So you can't discount the weight of that. Like people aren't going to be as quick to abandon ship as they were with Meek.
Yeah, no. I don't think anybody's going to abandon Pusher's ship. I think the Pusher fans are who they are, and they're not going to leave him. But I'm just saying, like, I don't think that it's going to be like, oh, it's over now. To me, one of the interesting things about the Pusher diss was it really showed me how much him and Kanye, like, damn near hate Drake, and he's under their skin because it was such a venomous comeback. It was almost like they was in the room like, yeah, fuck that nigga. Talk about his moms. Talk about 42. Fuck that nigga too. Like it's like a hate filled diss. It's like when Pac went at Biggie would hit him up. It was like hate filled. It was like, that's why it was so harsh. He was like, oh, you really hate this nigga. Like, damn, yeah. Son, like you hate him. Like yeah, you talk about, man. Yeah, you talking about fucking his wife and like you really hate him. It ain't, you know what I'm saying? So that's kind of interesting to me, but you know, what do you think, bro?
I mean, listen, I thought it was all, you know, everything was fair game. You know what I'm saying? Like, Pusher, you know, he mentioned his old lady, man. You can't mention nobody old lady, bro. And not think think it was going to be all good. I mean, the game is the game, you know, niggas hit you under the belt. I mean, you win the game. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really have much more to say about that. I mean, if Drake responds, great. We can get a hot little summer of some back and forth. Hopefully it just stays with that. I definitely don't think Drake want that smoke. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it'll be. And I think it's kind of cool, like the same way for a very long time, people in the NBA were saying, you know, I hate, you know, to see the guys, they're so friendly. Right. And it was kind of like that way in rap, you know what I'm saying? For a while. And that's kind of why we get excited when we actually like, oh, these niggas really don't like each other.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
For real.
Yeah.
Like, the Pop stuff was crazy.
Yeah.
Called the Monkey Suit Dennis. Like, wow.
Yeah.
And, yo, I mean, I thought the only thing where he was, like, habitually line step was with the 40 situation.
Which is horrible.
I thought that was horrible. I thought that was, like, all right, bro. Like, but I think, look, man. It's collateral damage, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's collateral damage. And it's also on a bigger picture. I don't know. Again, I'm not if the term is right, so I don't know if it's desperation is the right term. But like between this heinous, you know, this harsh rebuttal, you know, and again, all fair and rap beef, and the Whitney album cover, it just feels like Kanye's directing a lot of this. Because Kanye's trying to do anything he can do to get attention off of this guy that he cannot get off the pedestal. So yes. He's like, let's do album cover. Like, let's do this crazy, you know, to the response. Well, like, let's do anything to get the attention on us because I can't beat this nigga.
Right.
He's been running for 10 years and it ain't slowing down. He held Hov back. He held me back. You're like, I can't beat this nigga. Like, so what can we do? Yo, let's do Whitney's album. It feels kind of, a bit reckless. That's what I'm just the word looking for. It feels a bit reckless.
I feel like that response was all push. I don't feel like that was Ye. Yeah, the album cover was Ye and whatever, but I feel like that response to, I don't think Push needed any push, pun intended, for that shit, because Push is a nasty nigga. Like, that's what the, this is how the fuck he raps. Like, nigga been rapping about coke for 20 years. What the fuck? You know what I mean? So it's like, this is like, cause what's, this is what I would love to see happen, but I don't know if it's going to happen. Drake will try a little bit of a comeback, which just cannot be as possibly be as ugly as this shit. Cause you bring it up, Secret Babies and all this other stuff, and Push come back and put Malice on a track. And then it's all over. Then everybody goes home and that's it. Mm. It's done. Mm. It's a wrap. Cause what, you can't do nothing after that.
Yeah, I don't know. We're gonna see. We're gonna see how it ends. I mean, Kanye's album is allegedly coming out tomorrow night, you know, Friday, and we'll see if he has, if there's something about Drake on there. And then Drake's album is scheduled to come out in the next couple of weeks, I believe. So I don't know if we're gonna get a separate song previous to that, or we're gonna wait till Drake's album comes out. And I think my thing would be Drake just to make a smash. You know what I'm saying? Say a couple things in the smash, but just make a smash as opposed to another diss track. Just make a hit record, because them niggas can't do that.
Yeah, they can't make
the hit record.
Back-to-back shit ain't going to work on this.
Yeah, thing. Nah, just make a smash. Make a smash, say a couple little slick things in the smash. But if you make another, you know, Night for What, or, you know,
he can make a thing, baby.
Yeah, it's over then. Then it's done. It's like, what do you say? You know, so. I don't know. Yeah, but it's just good. You know, it's interesting to hip hop. It's interesting to see how it's unfolding. It's you know, it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really it. I think we covered all our bases.
Yeah. I think we're good.
Anything else?
We didn't talk about the pre-dates, but we can get into that another time, because there will always be some foolish topic on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
To discuss.
Oh, yeah. The pre-dates ain't never going away.
We can talk
about them shits like in the December, you know? That nigga's always going to be around that point.
Oh, my God.
We can get into that next week for sure.
Yeah. I think that was it, though. I think that was it.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. We're wrapping it up, and we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.